Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX, featuring the January 2025 The Spectrum Monitor. We'll begin by finishing the short remainder of Ratty Malahit DSP2, a new kind of portable SDR, by Robert Gully, K4PKM. It performed admirably up against my ELAD and AirSpy receivers, has the ability to drive a low-noise amplifier, and can boost signals with the high-impedance antenna connector. With a coverage of 10 kHz to 2 GHz, there is not much you are likely to miss reception-wise. Having the CAT control and audio drivers for Windows available, its functionality is further enhanced, opening up a multitude of utility, digital and military, civilian, aircraft, and marine modes. Finally, I spent quite a bit of time testing this radio, and so I have to make a special mention of thanks to my loving and supportive wife. She puts up with endless accounts of radio talk and trivia without complaint. I am truly blessed. The Ratty Malahit DSP2 is available directly from Radiodity for $430. The website is radiodity.com. And now, Amateur Radio Insights by Kirk Kleinschmidt, NT0Z, NT0Z at stealthamateur.com. You have enough antenna. What you need is more height. To achieve textbook gain and radiation patterns, horizontal antennas such as dipoles, Yagis, Vs, and non-vertical end-fed wires need to be installed at least a half wavelength above RF ground. Installing them at greater heights can make them work better over longer paths, and often poorer over shorter paths. But for textbook patterns and performance, it's important to remember the half wavelength minimum. For 20 through 6 meters, this isn't difficult. A half wavelength at 20 meters, for example, is only 10 meters, or about 33 feet. On 10 meters, a half wavelength is only 5 meters, or about 16 feet. Super easy. If you're using a 20-meter dipole mounted at 33 feet on 20 through 6 meters, for example, with a tuner as necessary, things get interesting in the other direction. On 20 meters, a 33-foot dipole meets the minimum requirement for expected antenna behavior on 20 meters, where it's a half wavelength high. But when it's used on 10 meters, the antenna is actually a full wavelength above the ground. There, the antenna exhibits the usual gain and directivity, but its response to signals from varying distances, signals arriving at varying wave angles, changes between half wavelength and full wavelength elevations. Beginners learn a bit about cutting dipoles to the correct length to make a typical half wave antenna, and a bit about how to make center and end insulators, etc. But they don't learn much about how high to mount these antennas and why. Besides, most of us don't have much wiggle room in the height department. The trees in our yard and any other available skyhooks determine how high our antennas can be installed. Radiation patterns be damned. But if we did have a choice in how high to install our horizontally polarized antennas, we'd notice some interesting effects. As a thought experiment, let's install a 200-foot-tall tower with identical dipoles, or Yagis, mounted at every 20 feet from top to bottom. Let's further assume that the antennas are oriented, aimed identically, and that feed line losses are normalized, or that each antenna had a 250-foot feed line to keep feed line losses identical, regardless of installation height. A switch allows us to connect our radio to any antenna at any one time. As we tuned the band, listening to various stations, signal strengths would vary from antenna to antenna, but the highest antenna would not always produce the strongest signal. What? There are two main factors that make this so. First, as we've been discussing, a horizontal antenna's height above RF ground strongly influences its radiation pattern, and further, the takeoff angle of its signals. Second, the signals reaching our antenna are arriving at a variety of angles, often described as the wave angle, vertical angle, or angle of incidence. Considering a simplified model of the ionosphere, not necessarily a good idea on a daily basis, far away HF signals often arrive at shallow, low, small angles, while signals emanating from medium-distance stations often arrive at moderate angles, with close-in signals often arriving at high, large angles. Again, considering a simplified model of how the Earth affects an antenna's response to signals arriving at various wave angles, we often assume that low-mounted horizontal antennas respond best to high-angle, close-in signals. Medium-height antennas respond best to medium-angle, medium-distance signals, with high-mounted antennas responding best to low-angle, far-away DX signals. These simplified assumptions are often right on the money. So, getting back to our 200-foot stack of independent dipoles, most of the time, the antennas mounted at heights at or above one wavelength would work best on DX signals, while the antennas mounted at heights near a half wavelength would work best for signals from 1,000 to 4,000 miles, with antennas mounted near the ground working best with signals from 0 to 400 miles, like the fellow posting in the forum. That's why horizontal non-vertical antennas for 160 to 30 meters don't work to spec when they're mounted at low heights. If a horizontal antenna isn't mounted at a half wavelength or more, forget about textbook radiation patterns, predictable DX performance, etc. Horizontal antennas mounted below certain minimum heights tend to be essentially omnidirectional. They still radiate all the energy they receive at their feed points, but predicting exactly how and where is anybody's guess. And if you add environmental factors such as nearby metal objects, power lines, metal roofs, etc., forget about trying to predict antenna patterns. The only solution is to try it and test, test, test. The ionosphere, to mix things up, isn't uniform, and signals can arrive at non-typical wave angles. That's why the topmost antenna in our dipole stack doesn't always provide the strongest signal. Sometimes DX signals arrive at higher angles, making them stronger on medium and lower mounted antennas. Fortunately for vertically challenged antennas everywhere, HF DX signals are never stronger on horizontal antennas mounted 10 feet above the ground. But some signals are. NVIS. Not a rental car company, NVIS stands for Near Vertical Incidence Skywave, meaning signals that reach our antennas from nearly straight overhead or at very high angles. If we're interested in working far away stations, an NVIS system is the last thing we want. But if we want to have a strong signal out to 200 to 300 miles on HF for local disaster response or military tactical communications, NVIS is the king of big signal, close-in HF comms. So, assuming that we want an NVIS system, how do we make one? Well, an HF dipole mounted 10 feet above the ground, like the forum poster, is almost unbeatable. Most of the antenna's signal radiation is straight up and down. That's why all of his QSOs on 40 meters were within 300 miles or so. His antenna, because of its mounting height, responds superbly to close-in signals, but minimally to signals from farther away. If he could mount his 40-meter dipole at 35 to 50 feet, signals out to 2,500 miles would be routine. At 66 feet, a half wavelength on 40 meters, DX performance perks up, while close-in performance falls off. At 140 feet, DX is king, while close-in signals may be barely copyable. At 300 feet, making the DXCC honor roll might be easier than qualifying for WAS. Of course, every antenna has at least some response to signals at every wave angle, but it's the low-mounted horizontal antennas that suffer the most when trying to work DX. Working DX or completing WAS with a 10-foot-high 40-meter dipole isn't impossible, but even with 100 watts, it's very difficult, no matter how skilled the operator. The right height. Among DXers, antenna mounting height is all the rage, and has been since at least as far back as the 1930s. During the golden age of shortwave broadcasting, even with high RF power levels available, station engineers still had to optimize the height of their rhombics or curtain arrays for best response at whatever wave angles were required to reliably reach faraway listeners. Members of one of the Hexagonal Beam online forums undertook a detailed analysis to determine the best average height at which to install a 5-band hex beam, 20 to 10 meters, to accommodate the antenna's wide frequency span while still optimizing it for typical DX wave angles. After crunching the data, the two best average heights emerged, 45 feet and 70 feet. A hexagonal beam at 45 feet will provide killer results for stateside and DX QSOs. And if you can manage, 70 feet works a bit better for DX, but a bit worse for domestic QSOs. In a perfect world, two hex beams, one at 45 feet and one at 70 feet, with an ability to switch between them, would be ideal. The best takeaway here is that you only need 45 feet to really get in the game. Although height above ground is critically important for managing effective communications ranges for all horizontal antennas, because most of us simply don't have many options, it's just not considered. We use the antenna we have, and that's that. Many ops who have rotatable beams steer them left and right, without even thinking about the process, when similar or even better results could be obtained by raising or lowering the antenna on its tower. But even the best-equipped contesters and DXers usually don't have directional antennas that can also be adjusted in height above ground. Instead, they have one or more antennas mounted at various heights, allowing the operator to select the antenna that's providing the best reception for a particular signal. Forward gain is almost completely irrelevant if your antenna can't produce RF at the wave angles required for the ionosphere to successfully reflect its signals. For HFDX work, if you're given the choice of a 6-element Yagi 10 feet off the ground or a dipole at 100 feet, I suggest you take the dipole. Big booms equal big RF booms. One related tidbit fell out of the Hexagonal Beam Forum conversation detailed at the start of the column. The poster knew that, in general, antennas that had more elements have more gain. And, with all accompanying conditions met, that's mostly true, save for log periodic Yagis, etc. But we can't simply add elements to add gain to our yagis in a practical sense without adding boom length and its geometric cost escalation. If you take a three-element yagi, for example, and add three more elements without adding boom length, nothing much happens, save for the real-world performance worsening. To get more gain and a better pattern, you need a longer boom. At HF, unlike 2 meters, this adds up in a hurry. Without crunching the numbers, I'd rather have a 4-element yagi with a 50-foot boom than a 10-element yagi with a 15-foot boom. I'd also prefer a hexagonal beam at 100 feet over a 6-element yagi at 20 feet. You should too. Your HOA should as well, but probably wouldn't. Skip zones. Because we're talking about HF wave angles and propagation, it's interesting to note that, regardless of your antenna, your signals don't propagate uniformly as a function of distance, as they would if you were in deep space. The ground wave emitted by your antenna is generally attenuated uniformly as a function of distance in the curvature of the Earth. Depending on frequency and the time of day, it may be useful from 10 to 100 miles. The portion of your HF signal that goes skyward and is reflected by the ionosphere, however, is subject to multiple wave angle and reflectivity factors. On average, your HF signal's first hop won't be reflected back to Earth for several hundred miles. If you're in New York City, for example, it's easy to work stations in Kansas City on 20 meters because it's the right distance away for an easy first hop. Working stations closer to NYC on 20 meters becomes difficult or even impossible at any particular time because of the skip zone, the region between where ground waves fade out and where first hop signals are reflected back to Earth. The first skip zone at HF depends on time, frequency, and other ionospheric factors, but it's typically several hundred miles. So, from NYC on 20 meters, you might work stations out to 40 miles via ground wave, then hear nothing at all until you hear first hop stations 800 to 1,000 miles away. That's why ops working on 5-band worked all states, 5BWAS, get excited when the skip is short, allowing nearby stations that normally reside in the skip zone to be worked on the upper HF bands. I am experiencing this hell right now as I struggle to complete 6-band WAS QRP. I have everything from 160 to 40 completed, but on the high bands, I have everything completed except for most close-in states. At these frequencies, the skip is rarely short, and when it's not, nearby states often require meteor scatter, auroral scatter, or other unusual modes that usually require a lot of RF power, which makes QRP even more difficult. Who knew that working Missouri, Kansas, or Nebraska from southern Minnesota would be much more difficult than working Hawaii or even Japan on 160 meters with 5 watts. During the 10-meter contest last weekend, I heard several much-needed nearby states on 10 meters, but they were very weak with their 100 to 1,000 watts, and they definitely couldn't hear me with my puny QRP signal. But a bunch of Japanese stations did, 6,000 miles away, even though I was running QRP SSB. The combination of usable sunspots and a decent band opening reminded me of the conditions I experienced for months or years at a time back in the day, but it still didn't put South Dakota in the 10-meter log. Your antenna's design and height above ground can influence the dimensions of the skip zone and determine your station's ability to work DX stations. Typically, the ionosphere to ground and back again mechanics that make long-distance communication possible don't support an unlimited number of hops. So, in the simplest sense, if the waves coming off your antenna are primarily at low angles, the distance covered between hops is greatest. High-angle signals might enjoy the same number of hops, but because the wave angles are much higher, the distance covered is much less. This is all very simplified, of course, but one antenna works South Africa, the other Chicago. New rules. The complex interplay of ionospheric conditions and antenna electromagnetics define the dance that we know as radio for every QSO and every antenna. So, how do we consistently achieve low wave angles suitable for long-distance QSOs? By mounting our horizontal antennas farther above ground. That's why DXers and shortwave broadcasters always have the tallest towers. Or by switching to antennas that can produce low wave angles without excessive elevation, such as verticals, which can be noisy on receive and often lack gain. Broadcasters can make up for this by running 250 kilowatts, while hams, not so much. For both forum posters, then, I offer the following adage. If you think you need more gain, what you probably need is more height. Darn. If you're a rule breaker, you might want to investigate the garden beam design, which is essentially a rotatable parasitic beam made from aluminum tubing vertical elements or aluminum wire vertical elements strung from a sloping pilot line. One reflector, one driven element, and a bunch of directors, all spaced along a lengthy rotatable boom that happens to be 3 feet above the ground. This gives you steerable, low-angle gain at ground level, but you may need to use Armstrong rotation with a 60-foot boom made from surplus 4-inch irrigation tubing, trussed, because you're going to want 6 to 8 elements. Why? Because vertically polarized antennas don't benefit from ground gain, typically about 6 dB, in the way that horizontal antennas do. To compensate, add boom length and more elements. More. At least you won't need a tower. About 10 years ago, when my long-suffering YL and I were QTH hunting, I was arranging for scrounged materials with which to make a 4-element 40-meter garden beam. Alas, although the QTH we decided upon has enough room to accommodate that antenna, it's not remote enough to secure YL buy-in for that sort of roadside attraction. But my neighbor, with whom I share a 300-foot property line, doesn't use his 6 acres anymore, so PL-259s for RG6. I don't have space for too many details this month, but many of you know that I have used RG6 75-ohm CATV coax for most antennas, HF through 6 meters, for decades, with generally excellent performance. Doing so has two challenges. First, honest to goodness, PL-259 connectors were all but impossible to find, which required the use of RG6 compression connectors, fabulous, and PL-259 adapters, okay, but maybe not fabulous. We'll continue this article next time. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.